a true crime story. Hi there. Thank you for joining me on my new podcast, Tell Me a True Crime Story. I'm your host, Holly. I'm so happy that you're listening and spending some of your day with me. This is a re-record of my very first episode. The first recording had very low volume. Now that I've gotten a little bit better handle on recording, I figured I'd just record it over. I don't want people to listen to the first episode and say, oh my gosh, this sucks so bad, throw this whole podcast away and never listen again. I've released 5 episodes now at the time of this recording, and I would love it if you'd listen to those too. Become a part of Tell Me a True Crime Stories family and subscribe to the podcast and follow my social media pages for announcements and pictures related to each case. Facebook and Instagram are at Tell Me a True Crime Story, and Twitter is at Tell Me a TCS Pod. I'm truly honored to be with you and keep you company as you work or drive or exercise, cook, clean, or whatever it is that you're doing. And I hope that you are happy, healthy, and safe. Now, let me tell you a true crime story. This is episode 1, The Tarrytown Murders, the murders of Margarita Ruiz and Esperanza Hope Wells. It was the early 2000s, and as I drove east along Florida State Highway 50 through rural Sumter County, Florida, I read the question along the top of the big billboard again, as I had done many times before. Do you know who murdered Esperanza Wells and Margarita Ruiz? A reward of up to $26,000 was shown up there too. The billboard had pictures of the two female murder victims, one younger with dark hair and glasses, and one older with white puffy hair. I was in my early 20s and I had a little girl. Her father and I had broken up, and he and I met at a gas station in Webster, Florida, every other weekend for her visits with him. This gas station was a halfway point between Winter Park, Florida, where he lived at the time, and Hernando Beach, Florida, where I'd lived at the time. It was about an hour drive one way for each of us, 2 hours round trip. So, as you can imagine, I saw this billboard often, and it always troubled me and intrigued me too, because I'd been a lover of true crime for as long as I can remember, before it was cool. People thought I was really weird. So, after learning the eerie details of the crime, I was horrified and saddened. Those two innocent, beautiful women were killed in their own home while babysitting 2 toddlers. Thankfully, the children had hidden during the murders and therefore were spared. After a while, my daughter's father ended up moving out of state. I no longer had to drive that route, and the billboard, those women, those 2 toddlers, and the unsolved case faded from my mind for a bit. But through the years, I'd think of those ladies from time to time, especially when I had to travel through that same area. About a decade after I'd first seen the billboard, when Margarita and Esperanza came to mind once again, I looked up the case online, curious to see if it had ever been solved. I was so happy to see that it had been and that their murderer is now held in maximum security custody on Florida's death row. Because those ladies' images had haunted me, I feel a personal connection to this case, and that's why I decided to cover this case as my very first episode on my new podcast, Tell Me a True Crime Story. Now, let's go back to the year 2000, to Central Florida, to an unincorporated little community called Tarrytown in rural Sumter County, Florida. Tarrytown, Florida is located just outside of the small town of Webster, Florida. Webster is well known for being home to a popular flea market. This flea market is a tourist attraction and one of the oldest and largest flea markets in Florida. It was established and chartered in 1937 by local farmers to sell their produce and cattle. If you aren't familiar with the non-coastal parts of Florida, you probably only think of beaches when you think of Florida. But this area, Central Florida, is so, so pretty. It's full of agriculture. It's scenic and picturesque. It's very green all around, and there are these huge, magnificent, mature, mossy oak trees, sprawling farms and ranches with vast open fields with cattle and horses. Just off of State Route 50, under majestic, shady oak trees, there sat a little white cottage with a small front porch, home to Margarita Ruiz, who was 72 years old, her daughter Esperanza Wells, who was 42 years old, and Esperanza's husband, Robert Wells. Esperanza means hope in English, and that's what I'll refer to her as throughout the rest of this story. Hope and her husband, Robert, had moved in with Margarita after Margarita's husband had passed away from bone cancer. The date was Wednesday, March 15th, 2000, in that quiet, tiny community of Tarrytown. The weather was beautiful that day, low humidity and no rain. In the morning, the temperature was in the mid-60s. Robert, Hope's husband, was at work at a Publix grocery store about 45 minutes away in neighboring Lake County. Margarita and Hope were at home in their little white cottage, babysitting Paige and Trevor. Paige and Trevor were Margarita's youngest grandchildren, the children of her son, Reuben. This makes Paige and Trevor niece and nephew of Hope. Paige was 3 years old and Trevor is about 2 years younger than his sister, so at the time, baby Trevor would have been 1 year old. Around 9 a.m. that morning, a ruthless killer stepped onto the back porch of the cottage. He fired a 9mm round right through the latched screen door. He forced his way into the small home and shot Margarita first. She shot several times and then stabbed in the neck. Hope was shot in the chin and stabbed in the neck 7 to 8 times. Both victims were found clothed and there was no sign of sexual assault. Money out in plain view and electronics were not taken. With no apparent motive, it seemed like killings just for the sake of killing. Little Paige and baby Trevor were left unharmed. Little precious Paige had hidden under the table, which had a tablecloth draped over it, and little precious Trevor had been in the living room. 3-year-old Paige told detectives as the murderer fled out the front door, she'd moved to the window to look out of it. There she saw a dark figure leaving in a green car. He'd backed out of the driveway and went east on State Road 50 towards Orlando. The investigators gleaned from Little Paige's description that they were looking for a black male driving a green car. Officials soon received a tip that the killings of the women were committed by 2 men during an apparent drug ripoff, but that the men had went to the wrong house. So investigators thought that they had a solid lead and that they were onto something. However, both of those men had alibis, and after checking into their alibis, they were cleared. That was pretty much all detectives had. The case went cold. It lay dormant, and the double murder went unsolved for 6 long years. In fact, it would be 11 and a half years before the murderer of Margarita and Hope would be convicted in a court of law. Now, let's go back in time just 2 days before Margarita and Hope were killed in Tarrytown, Florida. The date is Monday, March 13th, 2000, and 1,470 miles northwest of Tarrytown, Florida. We're now going to Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. It was chilly that afternoon, in the low 40s, as a man named Alfred Marquardt called 911. Upon returning home from work early, he'd discovered his wife, Mary Jane Marquardt dead on the floor of their garage. You see, he'd been at work but left early because he couldn't reach Mary Jane on their home telephone. When he called her from work, he'd kept getting a busy signal. When he found her in the garage, she was cold and there was a pool of blood surrounding her head. Mary Jane had been shot and stabbed in the neck. Her body was covered with the purplish-colored bedspread from her and her husband's bed. Investigators viewed this covering of her body with her own bedspread as a sign of a personal or emotional connection between the victim and the perpetrator, an act showing remorse or an attempt to, quote-unquote, comfort the victim in death. Police found a 9mm shell casing under her black Lincoln, which was parked in the garage near her body. There was no sign of a break-in and nothing was stolen from the home. Her autopsy revealed that there was no indication that she'd been sexually assaulted. Mary Jane was only 54 years old when she was brutally murdered. She'd enjoyed riding motorcycles with her husband and was a member of the Gold Wing Road Riders Club and the Chippewa Valley Road Riders Club. Mary Jane and Alfred had been looking forward to retirement together. They'd been married for 34 years and had 3 grown children, 2 sons and 1 daughter. Of course, Mary Jane's husband, Alfred, was investigated as a possible suspect, but he was soon cleared. As the investigation progressed, detectives attempted to clear Mary Jane's other family members. However, her youngest son, 24-year-old Bill Paul Marquardt, could not be located. Since Bill had been involved in drug dealing, investigators were concerned that Bill was a possible victim of murder or foul play, too. Just 1 month prior to the murder of his mom, Mary Jane, Bill had been discovered digging up about $12,000 in cash from his parents' yard. Maybe the murder of Mary Jane was related to drugs. Maybe Bill was the actual target because he was possibly still involved in the drug game. Bill had previously lived at his parents' home in Chippewa Falls. Maybe some bad guys went there looking for him, but instead found his mom there, and she somehow ended up being killed. Was there a drug motive behind the murder of Mary Jane? Bill's absence since his mother's death was weird, and maybe even suspicious, because of all the widespread news coverage her murder had received. Investigators went looking for Mary Jane's son, Bill Marquardt, at his remote cabin in the town of Fairchild, Wisconsin, about 40 miles southeast of his parents' home. There, they found 6 animal carcasses, 3 of which were dog carcasses and 3 of which were rabbit carcasses. The dogs and rabbits had been shot and their necks had been cut. They also found a blood-covered tarp in a nearby outbuilding. A search warrant for the cabin where Marquardt lived turned up a live 9mm round, 2 rifles, and a large knife with a sheath. With the live ammunition discovery being a violation of Bill's parole, the animal carcasses, plus the increasing circumstantial evidence, an arrest warrant was issued for the arrest of Bill Paul Marquardt for animal cruelty and violating his parole. But he was still nowhere to be found. Then, a few days later, on Saturday, March 18th, 2000, a neighbor of Bill's called officials to let them know that Bill's car had passed by, headed in the direction of his cabin. So, investigators went to the cabin to arrest Bill Marquardt. Maybe they could get some answers from him. Did he know anything about his mother's murder? Where had he been since her murder? Well, he told detectives he'd been on vacation. Upon searching Bill Marquardt in his cabin again, police found some valuable evidence. In his black pants pocket, they found a folding knife. On his shoes, there appeared to be blood spatter. In his car, there was blood on the door's armrest. Investigators uncovered 2 receipts in his car, one of which was a receipt from Fiesta Key KOA Campground in Long Key in the Florida Keys. His cabin was searched for a second time and then for a third time 11 days later. During the third search, 9mm bullets and a Stallard 9mm Model JS semi-automatic handgun were found under the refrigerator. This gun was later determined to be the murder weapon used to kill Bill Marquardt's mom, Mary Jane. Also, Mary Jane's blood was found on confiscated items taken from Bill's cabin, including the folding knife he'd had in his pocket when he was arrested on Saturday, March 18, 2000. Bill Marquardt was charged with the murder of his own mother. However, after a mental health evaluation, he was deemed incompetent to stand trial. But he did stand trial for animal cruelty for the killings of the dogs and rabbits and was found guilty in January 2003. A judge sentenced Marquardt to 75 years confinement in a state psychiatric hospital. Marquardt was sent to Mendota Mental Health Institute in Madison, Wisconsin. But prosecutors were still determined to try him for the murder of his mother. They asked for and received another competency hearing from Marquardt, in which he was found competent to stand trial. During the trial for the murder of his mother, the gun that had been found at Bill Marquardt's cabin during the third search of his home proved to be a problem for the prosecution. Marquardt's defense attorney argued that it must have been planted by police in an effort to frame Marquardt for his mother's murder, since it hadn't been found on the previous two searches. Well, I guess there was doubt planted in the jurors' minds, because Marquardt ended up being acquitted of the murder of his mom, Mary Jane Marquardt. The prosecuting attorney for Marquardt's mom's murder trial, John Tyson, was disappointed after losing the case, but he was determined. He was determined to solve a mystery that, if solved, could potentially put Bill Paul Marquardt away, behind bars, forever. What had been discovered during a forensic analysis of the blood evidence found at Bill's cabin had been nagging at Prosecutor Tyson. This is because the folding knife found on Bill at the time of his arrest, when he'd returned from his so-called quote-unquote vacation, held the blood of four people: Bill Marquardt, his mother, Mary Jane, and two unidentified but blood-related females. Now it was time to solve the mystery. Who were the two females whose blood was discovered on Marquardt's knife? How did their blood get there? Prosecutor Tyson was dogged in his pursuit to find out. His hunch was that Marquardt had used the knife in a violent attack or a murder against the two women whose blood was found on the knife during his convenient vacation road trip that took him to the Florida Keys, ironically, right after the murder of his mother. Prosecutor Tyson began to scour the internet looking for knife attacks or murders committed by stabbing upon two female victims who were related. He was looking for murders that fit the timeline and had occurred somewhere between Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, and the Florida Keys. Tyson had researched about 40 cases online when he stumbled upon a flyer on the Florida Department of Law Enforcement's website on the unsolved double murder of Margarita and Hope. He quickly reached out to investigators in Sumter County, Florida. After that phone conversation and a comparison of evidence, Florida authorities determined that Marquardt was the man they'd been hunting for 6 long years. His DNA matched male DNA found at the murder scene in Tarrytown, Florida. And the gun from under the fridge in his cabin matched shell casings left in the Tarrytown cottage. If Marquardt hadn't been acquitted of his mother's murder, D.A. Tyson may have never been so hell-bent on discovering the two female contributors to the DNA left in blood on Marquardt's knife. The year was 2006. Now, I want to tell you about something that happened back in Florida related to the case of Margarita and Hope. Little Paige, who was 3 when she'd witnessed the murders of her grandmother and aunt, had helped the investigation gain some more clarity in 2004. In 2004, Paige was 8 years old. Investigator Gary Brannon of the Sumter County Sheriff's Office had researched forensic hypnosis online and felt that if Paige's parents agreed, it was worth a shot to have Paige hypnotized to see if she remembered any other crucial information or details about the awful murders she'd witnessed. Paige's parents were in agreement to allow her to be hypnotized, and a forensic hypnotist from Texas was brought in to conduct the hypnosis. The unusual tactic worked, and Paige was able to recall, under hypnotism, that she'd never seen the murderer's skin tone. The pants he was wearing were black. That's all she could see from her vantage point where she was hiding under the kitchen table with the tablecloth hanging down. When Marquardt had been arrested on March 18, 2000, police had confiscated the clothing he was wearing, which included a black shirt and black pants. Now, let's go over a timeline and recap everything and show how these two cases are connected. On Monday, March 13, 2000, Mary Jean Marquardt is murdered at her home in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. She was shot and stabbed in the neck. Her son Bill cannot be found to be questioned by authorities. 2 days later, on Wednesday, March 15, 2000, nearly 1,500 miles away in Florida, Margarita and Hope are murdered in their home. They were shot and stabbed in the neck. On Saturday, March 18, 2000, Wisconsin investigators are alerted by Bill's neighbor that he's surfaced and that he's driving his green car toward his cabin. Officials go there and end up arresting him for animal cruelty and violation of his parole. In 2003, he is convicted of animal cruelty charges and sent to a psychiatric hospital. In 2004, little Paige is hypnotized in Florida and says that she'd never actually seen the skin color of the murderer of her grandma and aunt. She said he was dressed in black clothing. Marquardt ends up being deemed competent to stand trial for his mother's murder, but is acquitted in 2005. In 2006, Prosecutor Tyson discovers the unsolved double murder of Margarita and Hope on the internet and calls Florida authorities. In 2009, Marquardt is extradited from the mental facility in Wisconsin to Florida to stand trial for the murders in Tarrytown. That brings us up to the trial of Bill Paul Marquardt. Bill Paul Marquardt was tried in 2011 in Sumter County, Florida for the murders of Margarita Ruiz and Hope Wells. Marquardt served as his own attorney. He argued that fellow drug dealers had committed the killings and framed him for the crime by planting the handgun in his cabin in Wisconsin. The trial lasted 7 days. The jury convicted him of the double murder in October 2011. The jury was never told that he'd been tried and acquitted for killing his mother. Marquardt waived his right to be sentenced by the jury, so he was sentenced by a judge to the death penalty on February 28, 2012. Marquardt had wanted the death penalty because that meant a direct appeal, an automatic appeal to the Florida Supreme Court given to anyone who is sentenced to death. Marquardt felt that his conviction would be overturned on appeal. His death sentence was upheld by the Florida Supreme Court in 2015. That big billboard along State Route 50, depicting the lovely faces of Margarita and Hope, received a long-awaited update in June of 2006. Sumter County Public Works employees put the word "solved" in big, bold black letters across the bottom of the billboard. Ironically, one of those public works employees that had the honor of placing the letters on the billboard was 22-year-old Benjamin Ruiz. He is the grandson of Margarita and the nephew of Hope. Bill Paul Marquardt was remanded to the Florida Department of Corrections Union Correctional Institution on Thursday, March 15, 2012, exactly 12 years to the day of the murders of Margarita and Hope. Union Correctional Institution is in Rayford, Florida, about 45 minutes north of Gainesville, Florida. This prison is an all-male, all-adult facility and houses about 2,000 inmates. Today, Marquardt is 46 years old. His home is at this Union Correctional Institution on Florida's death row. He's held under maximum security as inmate number U44139. Mary Jane Marquardt's memorial service was held at St. Paul's Catholic Church in Bloomer, Wisconsin on Friday, March 17, 2000. Her cremation took place at the Eau Claire Memorial Crematory in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. A funeral service for mother and daughter, Margarita Ruiz and Hope Wells, was held at 10 a.m. on Monday, March 20, 2000 at Purcell Funeral Home Chapel in Bushnell, Florida. They were laid to rest together at Linden Cemetery in Linden, Florida. On one side of Margarita rests Hope, and on her other side rests her beloved husband, Benito, who died a year and a half before her murder. Thank you so very much for listening to the very first episode of Tell Me a True Crime Story. Please become a part of the Tell Me a True Crime Stories podcast family by following me on social media. Facebook and Instagram are at Tell Me a True Crime Story, and Twitter is at Tell Me ATCS Pod. So you can really help me out and the podcast by doing these three things: sharing the podcast episodes on social media, telling your friends and family about the podcast, and adjusting your settings to auto-download new episodes as they become available. Thank you so much for helping me to grow our podcast family, and hugs to all of you. And I hope to see you in the next episode where I will tell you another true crime story. Bye-bye.